Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Snake Oilers edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. As regular listeners would know, Snake Oilers is a wholly sponsored podcast series we do here at Risky Biz HQ, where vendors give us money so that they can come on and pitch their products to you, our dear, dear listeners. And we have three vendors along today to pitch to you. Google Cloud Security is in the top slot, pitching their Zero Trust product suite, BeyondCorp for Enterprise. You don't want to miss that. It's interesting stuff. Then we'll be hearing from an Australian startup that's done something really smart. They've developed a solution that makes Microsoft Intune actually usable. What a crazy idea. So if you'd like to be able to remotely admin your machines using Intune, now you can. And they've made it quite easy to deploy as well. That startup is called Devicey, and we'll be hearing from them shortly. And lastly, we'll be hearing from Trend Micro on their latest XDR features. That's a pretty general chat about where all of this XDR stuff is going. You know, is it splunky? Is it kind of going where seams are going? Is all the new XDR kind of like the old seam, just with endpoint logs, or is it something new? We'll dive into all of that as well today. But let's kick it off right now with a chat with Anton Chuvakin, the head of security solution strategy at Google Cloud. He's here to talk about BeyondCorp for Enterprise, Google Cloud's Zero Trust product suite for the enterprise. Here is Anton Chuvakin.
So first thing is the commercial product called BeyondCorp Enterprise actually launched this year in Q1. So it's a kind of very recent. Now, admittedly, Google's internal use of Zero Trust goes back a decade. So a lot of people were kind of asking us, can you teach us? Can you help us do the same? And I would say it took Google a bit of time to kind of create a packaged product that people can use using the same methodology approaches as what we use internally. Just like with Chronicle, Chronicle isn't a copy of a Google's own toolset, just like the BeyondCorp Enterprise isn't a copy of what Google uses internally, but it uses the same approaches, methodologies, some of the technology. But to the best of my knowledge, there's no reused code, at least to the best of my knowledge.
Well, it wouldn't make sense, would it? Because Google is not really a typical environment. If you're comparing Google to like a bank or something like that, you're not really going to be able to go one for one with what Google's doing.
Yes, indeed. And this point brings up one of the more exciting and also tough questions about Zero Trust, because Zero Trust adoption as a way to access resources remotely, it's kind of a journey. And Google, with having mostly new and very little legacy infrastructure, because hey, Google was born, way later than say mainframes or whatever, we didn't have to jump through some of the hoops to adopt Zero Trust internally. Yet even in our environment, it was hard. It took years to get to the current magically smooth and secure state. So to us, maybe teaching others and building products that would enable others to do the same or something similar, it takes work. And to me, this is kind of hard. You're right about the bank. If it's a bank or if it's a company whose IT started 50 years ago, transforming them from the perimeter approach, here's my network perimeter, here's the stuff inside, to more of a Zero Trust access approach, it's probably an even bigger journey. So it took us some time to figure out what tools we can build so that, well, non-Google can use them. So that's an excellent point.
So where did you wind up? I mean, as I say, the part that I find compelling as well, Google makes a browser, so you can start actually doing some pretty funky threat intel, feeding threat intel into the browser and stuff like that. But why don't you walk us through, what do I get if I go to Google and, Chronicle and say, can I please have some Zero Trust? What is it that you're actually offering?
Oh, first thing is you go to Google Cloud, not necessarily to Chronicle, because Chronicle now is the product name for our security analytics product. The business unit is just called Google Cloud Security. Now, you would get a way to access applications inside your enterprise and, of course, in the cloud using using Zero Trust style access, which means without a VPN, yet with security and detailed access control. It does rely on Chrome for some tasks. For example, the most critical task, there are actually several tasks. Chrome helps us collect the endpoint telemetry, because Zero Trust, as some people would say, isn't about nothing is trusted. We don't trust the perimeter. We don't trust an IP address. Oh, this is a good IP, this is a bad IP. But we have to trust some stuff about the endpoint, about the user, of course. So for example, if you look at other vendors, they sometimes talk about how multi-factor authentication is critical for ZT. And it is, because to trust the user, you want something more than a password. If you are allowing somebody access straight to an internal app from the outside, you do want to know that who they say they are is who they are, right? And you also need to know something about where they're coming from, their device. Is it a laptop or a phone? Is it a corporate one? Is it instrumented? So to me, you do have to trust that part. And it's kind of a funny when you have an industry contact who's kind of a zero trust absolutist who says, nothing is trusted. And of course, you have to trust the zero trust tooling, right? You have to trust the endpoint telemetry. You have to trust that the user role is correct. You have to trust the user is who they say they are. So there are things we have to trust, right? And so Chrome, to an extent, is an enabler for some of the things we have to trust. Who is the user? What kind of machine they're coming from? What's on that machine? What does it do? What kind of access? And of course, other things. So to me, Chrome is also a way to perform some other security tasks. Like for example, when you buy the Uncorp Enterprise, you get DLP inside of Chrome, which is kind of something that I get the people who wrote up the copy kind of didn't mention in a very visible manner, that you would have some data loss protection inside Chrome, you'd get some malware protection inside Chrome, so that if you're coming from a device, you can also do access policies based on that. And you can also apply other security controls. It's all kind of rolled up into the whole bundle. So to me, this is quite magical. And it's also,
in a zero trust model, what better turning the browser into the security agent makes total sense. It makes absolute 100% sense because, we did this interview recently where we were talking, actually it was a news segment where we're talking about how some attacker managed to compromise a machine and then install a malicious browser extension silently so that they could get into that browser, start stealing authentication information. I mean, in a zero trust network, attackers are really after an administrator's browser, for example. So actually having the browser considered as part of the overall equation makes complete sense.
Yeah. And of course, there would be people who show up and say, what if I don't use Chrome? Like, that's a reasonable supposition, right? There are really other good browsers. And of course, Chrome is now embedded in a bunch of other browsers, Chromium at least. So I would say that we do also use other sources of telemetry. If we need to know the endpoint state, we have some endpoint partners. We have some EDR partners and other partners whose telemetry we would trust. And so we would know that if their agent is reporting something to our zero trust system, then it is the correct information. So to me, this is one part. The other tricky part, which took a bit of time, is that a lot of zero trust style access is very easy for cloud apps, and it's relatively easy for web apps. But of course, not every legacy enterprise will have all web apps. So we'll have to have possibly partners for enabling applications that aren't available over HTTPS or HTTP.
Yeah, so this would be like thin client sessions and things like that. One of the things that's popped up a lot in popularity since COVID is really this idea of an identity-aware proxy, right? For doing this sort of stuff, and you can glue that to all of your existing identity management stuff. It's all fantastic. Unfortunately, for most companies just rolled out straight VPNs and they're all getting ransomware and it's horrible. But, with any luck, we're going to see more of this sort of approach. So, when we talk about the fundamental building blocks of what Google Cloud is offering here, it sounds like it's, an instrumented browser, it's an identity-aware proxy. It's these sort of basic building blocks, but sort of strung together in a more cogent way. Is that a fair summary?
That's correct. But the strung together in a cogent way is kind of, there's a range. Like if we were talking 2 years ago, I would say there's no inside Chrome components, but there are other ways to get endpoint telemetry. So there would be a lot of work that you will have to do to enable it for yourself. People still did it. We had some commercial-ish zero trust clients even before the launch, but they did it themselves using our components. Today, the components are connected together in a product/solution. So you will have the telemetry flowing where it needs to go. You have the IAP connected to other sources of telemetry, to identities. So to me, that it became a product only late last year, this year, something that you can buy, deploy, and use. still, I agree that zero trust is broadly speaking a philosophy, but it's also, there's a, like a broad zero trust, narrow zero trust. We do enable zero trust style access to applications. To me, this is like a specific thing you can buy and deploy.
Now, when it comes to the identity part of all of this, I mean, you're not running your own sort of identity directories and things like that, are you? I mean, I'd imagine you'd be integrating.
We actually do, but we do, but we don't assume the clients would use ours. Yes.
So yeah. We do. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, your clients, like, does this integrate with Azure AD or like, you know, and then further out to things like Okta? And I mean, how does all of that, how does that ID piece work? Because that's an important
thing.
You're
correct. You're correct. Through integrations. Now, if you are using this to access, you know, workspace apps, what used to be called G Suite apps or our own Office Suite, right? Then it's our identity integrated through other identity repos. But if you're enabling access to customer apps and the customer isn't even a workspace, formerly known as G Suite customer, then yes, it would be through integrations. I actually, in front of my eyes, I don't have the list of partners.
Just to ask quickly there, when people are using Google Workspace, do they federate out the identity component to things like Active Directory and Azure AD and things like that? Or do people tend to use Workspace's own, you know, a separate directory just for their Workspace users?
You know, I'm somewhat embarrassed to admit that I don't know the percentages. The answer is yes, but I don't know the percentages, at least not off the top of my mind. So there would be people with AD integrations, and there would be people with our identities.
No, makes sense. I was just curious there because it is, you know, quite the topic du jour, especially when we're talking about all this zero trust stuff, because a lot of it is about integrating stuff all together. And it sounds like, you know, this is what Google Cloud's trying to do, which is to make that process easier. And that is, that sort of lets you pick the type of zero trust you want, I guess, you know, given that it's got 100 different definitions.
Yes, correct. But at the same time, there would be environments where it's like really easy to our own workspace apps. There would be environments where it's pretty easy, but not easy. That would be to internal web apps. And there would be environments where it's like really, frankly, not easy, where there would be non-web apps. Some of this would be through Citrix, who is our partner for the what we call BeyondCorp Alliance. And that's where it gets tricky. And that's where the journey to zero trust is going to involve more steps.
Yeah.
But for web apps, we feel like we have a pretty nice bundle where you can toss out some of your VPN traffic. Now, admittedly, I've seen few companies where they would go through like a singular moment where they turn off VPN at midnight and they're in the morning, they're zero trust. I don't think that's what happens in real life. No. You'd have a transition journey where you would decrease usage. And today, during this type of a pandemic uncertainty, it's much easier to see where your VPN usage is growing and where you can potentially, you know, cut the growth and go to something that uses a different approach.
Try to slow down the bleeding, right?
Yeah. So here's a funny one. I'm going to ask a tough question to myself, and here's the prep for it. So we recently launched this new podcast, and the most popular episode we have is on Zero Trust. So people started asking us questions. And one question somebody asked when we aired this episode was this. If I have a really well-instrumented traditional environment with VPN, and I have great resources, the best people, the best VPN, how is it not as good as zero trust? And this is a really good question. Imagine that I am doing, it's almost like the comparing maybe the best propeller fighter to the first jet fighter. You'd think, well, the best propeller fighter would be kind of the apex of the previous technology. So how can it not be better? And it's actually a much tougher to answer than it seems because
There are more opportunities to misconfigure things. I think that's the answer to that question. If I had to
think of it. Thank you, dude. You read my mind. This was exactly the answer that I've given to the person after some thinking. Like, the VPN is just much easier to screw up.
Yeah.
And screw up badly.
Well, because it's not just about the VPN, it's about what's on the other end, and it's about blind spots in your instrumentation and your visibility. And I mean, that's the whole appeal of zero trust, right? Which is that you can get some of these fundamental things right in a way where, you know, you just watch this thing and this part of the problem is dealt with. I mean, that's the appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly right. And I promise we didn't set it up. I you really did answer it exactly the way I wanted to answer, because it's the chance of a mistake and the blast radius of a mistake, chance of misconfiguration and the damage from that is what would separate the absolute best VPN environment with the absolute best team to a modern zero trust environment.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing, right? If you set this up right, then bad activity is actually going to be visible. Whereas there are so many subtle ways once you're on the network to do stuff where people are just, you know, that's just going to slide on by. Anton Chivakhin, we're out of time. That was a very interesting conversation. People can check out Beyond Corp Enterprise. I have linked to it from the show notes for this podcast. Again, it's been a real pleasure. I'll look forward to chatting to you again.
Thank you very much.
That was Anton Chivakhin from Google Cloud Security there. Big thanks to him for that. On to our next snake oiler now. And I really enjoy talking to companies like this one, small startups that have just done something smart. So we're about to talk to Martin McGregor, the co-founder and chief executive of Devicy, an Australia-based startup. Devicy offers software designed to manage endpoints, Windows, macOS, iOS, and Android, but it's agentless because they base their whole solution on Microsoft's Intune. As usual, Microsoft built some awesome plumbing, then didn't really finish the job. And that's what Martin and his friends focused on building or completing, some software based on Intune that can actually manage endpoints easily. Here's Martin McGregor of Devicy.
Sometimes people even think that we're a competitor to Microsoft because they say, you know, how do you stack up against Intune? But obviously we're not. What we're really doing is making the adoption of Intune super easy. It takes a lot of time and a lot of, you know, really smart people that just aren't available in the market to make it great. You know, it could take probably like a year or two to actually get it operational to the extent that people can work autonomously. And the expense for that is massive, and it just makes it unapproachable to most businesses.
Well, I mean, just before we started recording, you were telling me that, some of your customers had spent six figures just trying to configure Intune, and they're like, yeah, okay, it's ready. And then they tried to, you know, they could only do a very limited set of things even once they were down that road.
Totally. Yeah. Even keeping them up to date, doing patching is just too hard. And yeah, often it's the end users that suffer. They get a, you know, less than ideal scenario. And, the other ones that usually are concerned are the security people in the business, because they don't get the visibility they need of devices and they can't manage configurations effectively.
Okay, so this is probably a good time to actually start talking about what your product actually does. You know, it sounds like it's a front end for Intune that gives you a bit of visibility and gives you a lot easier control. But why don't you actually walk us through like what it is that you've built and how it actually works with Intune?
Yeah, so what we wanted to do was essentially be able to manage Windows, Mac, Android, and iOS over the internet. And Intune became a really viable candidate because it's a native ecosystem. You're able to manage a Windows 10 device or a Mac device through this ecosystem that doesn't require an IT person to install an agent or something like that. So you have a method of being able to manage a device and apply configurations, and we exploit that to provide a whole bunch of capabilities, everything from managing applications, applying role-based access. We manage identity management. We manage the configurations of the devices. For example, we apply the CIS benchmarks. We do application whitelisting natively. We do ASD Essential 8 natively. All of these things. We also, you know, we use the MITRE ATT&CK framework to look at all of the tactics that, you know, obviously are out there, and we build mitigations for each of those as well. And then we create a dashboard for customers so that they can see the configuration of all of these devices, regardless of where they're in the world, what their compliance posture is. We've done it in a way so that we can make everything audible. You can look at the configuration of any device over the previous, you know, number of years, whatever you need to at any particular point in time. And we try to take care of all of the requirements that a typical IT team would be concerned about, even just things like printing, and then everything that the security team would be concerned about, you know, as well.
Now, I mean, this is certainly a business that falls into the category of being between the toes of giants, right? Like, why is it so hard for a company like Microsoft, which is supposed to be creating this type of software, why is it so hard for them to make something that's as usable as this? Where, you know, why do you have this opportunity? It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. So Intune's been around nearly 10 years now. Like, I think people were surprised to hear that. You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what I would say is that people just underestimate how difficult it is and how difficult it is for an organization like Microsoft to move quickly, and the challenges that we have to deal with in terms of end user computing and especially security just moves so fast. You know, every year it's so much more threatening and so much more difficult. Obviously, COVID made a huge impact last year. Everybody's trying to catch up. And it's just not that easy.
Yeah, it's just not that easy unless you're nimble and you can do it quickly. So why don't you walk us through a couple of quick case studies of your software? Like, what are the use cases that when you're in a sales meeting, when you're sitting down with someone who's on the buying side, you know, what's one of the things that you tell them that makes them go, oh, yes, please, you know?
Well, it really depends on you know, who we're talking to. So what we're sort of surprised by is how unsatisfied employees are with the experience of using devices in organizations. The business owners are usually really familiar with this problem. They know how much their end users are suffering, and they're typically complaining about it. So when we're dealing with a business owner, what they're concerned about is having a really, really nice user experience, removing the burden of IT. IT, you know, they're sort of solving this problem now with couriers. Devices get sent to the office or a place where they can build them. They send them out to the staff. There's a big lead time there. And then if a device has problems, they're typically shipping them back to the office, or IT's traveling. So it's a big expense and it's not a good outcome. End users are still not enjoying the experience. So that's really one of the big focuses for us, is we make it absolutely seamless. Even for a Mac, it's super, super easy to onboard a Mac. Anybody can do it. And then the you know, if we're talking to security, what they're concerned about is how they can meaningfully defend against things like ransomware. What's their ability to actually patch? What's their ability to keep devices up to date? You know, not just applying security patches, but doing upgrades for new versions. What's their ability to apply a sensible baseline, you know, or harden those devices in a way that doesn't impact usability and the business's ability to, you know, to operate. Those are the kind of challenges that we try to make really, really simple for them.
It's basically just a grab bag of like anybody who actually wants to manage their devices, which is basically everyone.
Yeah, it's a universal problem. And I think the proof is in the pudding. We can't do this really effectively with the technology that we have. I've been doing this for organizations for a long time. Over 20 years, I've been building SOEs. And
yeah, because you started as like IT guy in the basement, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, actually, my first paid job was building an SOE for dairy farmers in 96 or 95, something like that. Yeah. And I've been doing them ever since. And the technology is still the same. It's kind of like there's still an expectation that the computer sits in the office. That they're often land based. They need LANs to deploy, and then a staff member would typically in the past visit their computer to work. But because people take the computers everywhere now, that doesn't work anymore.
I think what you're getting at too, with the couriers and stuff, everything flying around. I mean, what you're getting at now is if you need to enroll an end user from home, that's going to be pretty easy by just getting them to go through the Intune enrollment process. I mean, this would have saved everyone a lot of grief if it existed, it was fully developed about a year ago. Was it?
It was actually, yeah, it was. So we had some customers, so, you know, you mentioned some case studies. We've had customers that have been using it now for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And when COVID hit, it just made absolutely no difference to them. One of the companies that I'm talking about, they grew about 600%, and they only had to employ a couple of IT people to manage their corporate stuff across the globe. And they've got operations in America, Asia.
Because I guess you would have just like pushed a VPN config as well.
No, we try to stay away from VPNs. It's not a big fan of VPNs myself. So
me neither.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, how? Okay, so you're pushing these apps out to an end user. How are they then accessing corporate data using those apps?
It's all part of the problem. Yeah, so what we're doing is part of our product is how we bring a company to maturity really fast. We use automation for everything. So part of onboarding is getting them away from depending on sites. So we move their file storage into OneDrive. We've built a process to automate that. And we kind of look at all of the requirements that they typically have. There's some cases where they still have on-prem apps, And in those cases, they will still need a VPN.
Yeah,
you know, if they want
that's
to,
kind of what I was thinking about. But it's interesting, right? Because OneDrive is the SMB share of 2021, right? And you know, your Azure AD is like you can still do all your old AD tricks with that. Everything that's new is old. Yes. No, that's interesting stuff. So, I mean, I just would have thought, like, you know, even on patch management alone, that's a huge market. Is there any one particular area that's getting more uptake, or are you still at the point where you've just got customers who are coming along and just generally like the whole thing?
Yeah, we're not there to replace software that would sit on an endpoint that would, you know, EDR or something like that, or antivirus software. We're not trying to compete with that.
No, obviously. Yeah.
We're trying to get the basics done that organizations find difficult, and typically there's gaps, you know.
But I mean, you would be putting the EDR agents and the AV onto the boxes, right? And that's even that is kind of a pain in the ass.
Well, yeah, because it's how do you know, you've got all these devices out there. How do you actually reach them to install stuff on them in the first place without an IT person physically being a local admin and installing an agent? You know, that's kind of one of the initial problems, is you need that human to touch it. So we don't want to work that way. We want to take away local admin from people in a way that doesn't hinder them. You know, that's why we make apps really available super fast. We built all of these automation pipelines where we manage a big back catalog of apps. So whenever there's new versions, they're automatically updated. The organization, everyone's on the same version. If you're in the developer group, everybody in your developer team will have the same libraries, the same software. We want to make it so easy for them to use us that they don't need local admin, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's music to the ears of basically everyone listening, because, you know, local admin is the work of the devil.
Well, yeah, it is. It just makes it's much more difficult for us. But the problem is that we need to give local admin to people so much of the time because we don't have a meaningful way of managing their devices. And we still need them to have autonomy. And, you know, when we can't, get them operational, sometimes they have to look after themselves. And, you know, it's a symptom of poor management. And, you know, I think everybody on this podcast will know how much distrust there is. And as soon as you start saying, we'll take away local admin, people start to panic because they think, well, you know, how will I be able to do what I need to do? And the reason for that is because I think we've let them down in the first place. We haven't taken the time to consider how they work, what they need to work, and you know, really building systems that make it easy for them.
All right. Well, the product name is Devicey. Look, it sounds like it's definitely worth checking out. Take it for a hoon. Do you do free trials?
Sort of. We do a thing called a production validation where it's a 2-week process where we bring an organization to the sort of maturity that we're talking about. We test one of their most important use cases. So it might be the most important role in their business. And we prove to them that, you know, everything that we're saying actually works and, you know, is feasible. And we don't charge for that. And the reason, you know, is because I think once we get to that point, people are pretty willing to sign up.
Yeah, but no one says, no, please take it away.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't want to go back. Yeah,
that's the best way to sell there is. All right, Martin McGregor, thank you so much for joining us on Snake Oilers to have a bit of a chat about Devicey. It sounds cool. I love stuff I always love stuff that's exploiting native functionality. It's the best stuff. So cheers.
I'm with you. Thanks, Patrick.
That was Martin McGregor there from Devicey. Big thanks to them for that. And you can check them out at Devicey.com. That's Devicey.com. Endpoint management is a very tricky business. And anyone who's actually put together something using native tooling, you know, they're probably worth talking to IMO. Okay, on to the third and final Snake Oiler for today's edition, and we're chatting with Eric Skinner of Trend Micro, and he's joining us to talk more about XDR. Trend is all in on what they call extended EDR or XDR. Basically, it involves ingesting endpoint logs and correlating them with other data sources. This is like a EPP, endpoint protection, industry-wide trend. And yeah, Eric joined us to tell us about Trend's latest feature rollouts in its XDR products. And he started off by repeating his description of what XDR actually is. Here is Eric Skinner of Trend Micro.
Yeah, it's the EDR approach extended to other data sources where you're trying to consume as much telemetry as you can, not just alerts. So that you can do what EDR was already good at on the endpoint, which is look at over a period of time at the regular activity that's happening and then start spotting some of the threats that are harder to spot otherwise.
So what other data sources are you ingesting? Because I understand, you know, Trend has an IDS or IPS type of appliance, right? So I'd imagine you'd ingest from there. You're also pulling in like O365 information, is that right?
Yeah, we have a platform that plugs into Office 365 and collects all kinds of activity telemetry and does all kinds of threat detection and fraud detection and things like that. So that's one of the most important data sources because a lot of threats come in through email and a lot of threats spread internally through email. And we have all kinds of capabilities on cloud workloads, on internal workloads, and then network threat detection, where you're not just looking at the IPS telemetry, but you're saying, okay, what kind of weird stuff is floating around on the network? Because network telemetry will let you see endpoints, for example, that are not protected by EDR. You might have a contractor laptop in the building, or you might have, some other device that doesn't run agents, and network will let you see those.
What you're describing sounds kind of splunky.
Yeah, so there's certainly a convergence coming with the XDR approach and the SIM approach in the market, and that has not happened yet. But SIMs are very good at ingesting alerts from all kinds of places. XDR is generally an approach where people are not only ingesting alerts, but they're looking at all the activity, and that is not typically what SIMs do. So those things eventually do have to come together, but the vendors out there that are doing XDR, they're generally looking at way more information than what the SIM gets, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it does. All right, so you are here to give us your best pitch for the new capability in Trend's XDR. So Eric Skinner, go.
Right. So we are extending our XDR with some great risk insight capabilities in this platform we call Vision One that encompasses our XDR and a variety of other capabilities. And we've been working with customers who've been loving what they can do with XDR, but they've been working to help us define new use cases. And part of that is to say, okay, what can we provide in terms of scoring and in terms of influence on automated decisions based on the risks that we can measure related to the state of devices, the state of users, and the states of applications that they connect to.
Okay, so give us some tangible examples of what you're actually talking about there, because it sounds great, but, you know, let's talk real world concrete examples.
So EDR capabilities are already looking at, you know, okay, what kind of threat activity is happening on your endpoint, and which process is opening PowerShell and these kinds of things. And that's awesome, right? When we layer on risk insights, we talk about three main categories: user risk. So there we're looking at all kinds of telemetry about the use of the identity. So their login activity, the behavior of that identity across all the different data sources that we can see, how their email is behaving. So we start to get insight into whether their identity is compromised. So for example, is that user identity sending dangerous emails? And that would give us the indication that they're identity has been phished, or maybe their credential has been dumped somewhere. So the fact that they're sending strange emails can then factor into a higher risk score for that user. Or you take a device and you say, okay, beyond the threat activity on that device, okay, there's weird PowerShell or whatever else, you can say, are there any vulnerable applications on that device? Is the OS patched? So if there's a vulnerable application and it's unpatched, that can influence the prioritization for strange EDR activity that we're seeing for users that have that particular application installed. And we can even tell which users are actually using that application on a regular basis and raise the priority for those users.
Yeah, so there's something funny going on with this device, and we can also see that it missed a pretty critical patch. So that would tend to indicate, yeah, that would boost the score, wouldn't it, that something is up.
Right. Or, you know, it's Joe's device that is behaving strangely, and Joe's email is now also sending all kinds of strange stuff. Therefore, let's prioritize the SOC team looking at Joe, or let's prioritize the managed service, the managed detection and response service looking at Joe.
Now, I mean, before we got rolling, I kind of mentioned, because one of the other things too that you're doing, well, I suppose you sort of touched on it there, is trying to overlay vulnerability information about the devices, about the endpoints on top of, you know, threat information. So, yeah. You know, this is an idea that I kind of poo-poo in the show a lot. And I've kind of realized that's not fair, because the first crack that vendors had at doing this stuff was nearly 20 years ago, and it just didn't work, right? So I'm sort of still stuck in that mindset of like, that doesn't work. But I mean, it is 20 years later, right? So I'm guessing there's maybe some value there.
Yeah, it is 20 years later, and at the same time, there's no perfect way to assess and manage all the vulnerabilities in your environment. So I'm not suggesting that there's a silver bullet. However, a lot of the older approaches to vulnerability assessment are leveraging scans that you run periodically. They're out of date.
But I mean, it's not even that, Eric. I mean, what I'm talking about is when you try to take the results of your VA, even if it's not comprehensive, and sure, overlay it against threat information and say, well, that box is being targeted with this threat that we know the box is vulnerable to. And this was like the holy grail, you know, back in the day. But it sounds like this is something that you're doing now, which I guess... it's different because now it's not being marketed as being a completely comprehensive thing. It's being marketed as occasionally we'll be able to give you something pretty actionable because we can see, you know, we can see what's happened here and why.
Yeah, I think of two things. First of all, it can influence prioritization because unlike 20 years ago, now we have EDR technology deployed on the endpoint. And so you can combine the fact that you know this endpoint is running a vulnerable version of some application with the fact that you know the user leverages that application all the time, and now that you can also see that application is launching strange-looking PowerShells because EDR is taking a closer look at that application because it knows about the vulnerability. So I think the combo of the EDR-XDR technology and the vulnerability assessment can result in more effective prioritization.
I think another big difference too is 20 years ago that was seen, that holy grail was seen as being, you know, a big solution, right? As opposed to being something that was useful in some cases. Yeah, exactly, right? So I think that that is a difference. Now, you sent me some notes prior to this chat, right? Yeah. You said like one of the things that customers really are digging about this and one of the things they wanted is just, you know, to have some more info on their dashboard.
Yeah.
One of the things that you've got is, and this is the reason I'm singling this one out is because I know this is a thing users want because I'm hearing from other vendors that this is the sort of stuff they provide to them as well, but it's risk scores on individual users, right? So one thing companies have kind of cottoned onto in the last sort of 5 years is that 90% of your problems come from like, you know, 1% of your users who just have exhibit risky behaviors, right? So if you can identify them, overlay additional controls and things like that, or, you know, additional monitoring, you know, you actually wind up getting in a better place. Was that the rationale behind introducing this user risk scoring?
It's two things. One, showing it on a screen where people can look at it and say, okay, great, you know, let's get proactive here and let's go and work with these top three vulnerable, risky users. The other thing is that even without putting it on a dashboard, the risk score can influence prioritization of SOC alerts in other ways. So we can say, okay, we have a whole bunch of gray alerts from EDR style detection. Which ones do we want to prioritize? Let's prioritize the ones on the risky users endpoints, for example. So that risk score presents itself in a dashboard. It even lends itself to company scores because customers actually want to track how they're doing over time. They want to say, okay, overall, because of all the hard work we're doing, can we show our CISO that things are getting better? That's of interest. But that risk score also factors into automated decision-making. One of the things that we expect it will do is it will inform access control decisions, for example, because lots of people now talking about refreshing their VPNs with technologies like SASE and ZTNA. And one of the things you want to do there is you want to say, well, okay, I want to make a zero trust style decision, but do I really want to grant access from this device to this resource at this particular moment in time? And the user risk score we know is very useful at that moment because we can pull together a range of different telemetry items to say, yeah, looks pretty good to let Patrick connect to Salesforce right now versus, wow, we see strange activity, maybe don't let Patrick connect.
Now, this might seem like a strange one, but do you think there's going to be an integration between EDR, XDR and PAM solutions? Because I think that's coming.
Yeah, it's a it's an interesting intersection point right now. What we see is various vendors putting out ZTNA and SASE functionality and really taking on a lot of that decision-making themselves. And you might see something from Trend in the future too, with respect to, okay, we can intercept your desire to connect to some SaaS application that we already have a plugin for. Does that mean that we're starting to become a PAM vendor? Kind of, sort of, but we also think that the PAM vendors can call vendors like Trend who have these user risk scores available through APIs, and they can enrich their access control decisions. So what will it really look like in a few years? I don't know.
Well, you can also reach out to the PAM solution. Well, they can cross interact, right? So, you know, if you've got a popped user, you can start removing access via the EDR or, anyway.
It's via various places, right? Because we actually, with an XDR style environment, you actually have not only that visibility in places like the endpoint and Office 365 and so on, but you have a range of enforcement points. So we can reach back and say, okay, we really don't like what's happening on this endpoint. So we're blocking their access, or we're disabling their ability to connect from their endpoint to this particular SaaS application or whatever. So there's a lot of granular enforcement points.
You can say, well, if this endpoint is compromised, we're going to remove privilege for all of the accounts that exist on that. You know, we're going to nuke the accounts that were accessed from that box, right? So
So you end up with rules engines, and are you a PAM now? I don't know. Yeah.
All right, Eric Skinner, thank you very much for joining us on the show to walk through this discussion about what's sort of going on with XDR and how that's all trucking on. And we should point out too, this isn't just a Trend thing. This is sort of an industry-wide phenomenon. People are trying to get their EDRs to be less about endpoints and more comprehensive while still trying to not be a seam. It's kind of like there's a bit of needle threading going on here, right?
Yeah, I think that it's an exciting time because I'm really seeing useful results coming from our XDR efforts, but also what other vendors are doing, right? Why treat these things in isolation? Really, you know, EDR started that process of saying, hey, let's look at a span of time. Let's not make individual decisions about, you know, some bad file. Well, okay, why not extend that span of time look across various other data sources? So yeah, like if people want to check it out from our end, they can go to trendmicro.com/risky. And they'll see what we have available. Ooh,
special link. Everybody go hit it. Set up scripts. Go nuts. Go wild. all right. Thank you so much, Eric, for joining us on the show. It's always a pleasure to chat to you, my friend. And we'll be checking in with you again later in the year.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
That was Eric Skinner of Trend Micro there, rounding out this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back next week with more security news and analysis. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.